නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. Actually, last week we were discussing Susima Sutta. One interesting incident was recorded there, where one wanderer, wandering ascetic, called Susima, coming to the dispensation or Buddha Sasana, the Sangha, in order to steal the Dhamma. Basically, during that time, Buddha and the Sangha were well reputed, and a fair amount of reputation was there, respect was there, honor was there, and they were being venerated. So as a result of that, they were readily receiving all the requisites, that means food, cloth, that means robes, and the dwelling, as well as various medicines. So without much trouble, they were receiving that. But on the other hand, the other ascetics, other various other religious groups, they didn't receive it. So one group is headed by Susima, and the group is now suggesting him to go and learn the Dhamma from the Buddha, what is available in the Sangha, so that ultimately he can return back to the wanderers and he can teach the others, and they also can explain that particular teaching to the others, to the lay people, and they also will start receiving all the requisites. So that was the plan. So accordingly, Susima went to Venerable Ananda and asked for going forth. And Venerable Ananda taken him to the Buddha. Buddha immediately asked Venerable Ananda to ordain him. So as we discussed last time, basically Buddha may know that that Susima is coming for this sort of an ulterior motive. But at the same time, he might have seen the potential available with this Susima. He has the potential to become an arahant. If he being given a kind of a probation, then it could be a little discouraging factor for him to get into the sasana. So anyway, immediately Buddha granted him the ordination. So he became a monk. And he is practicing, he is learning Dhamma, so that he can learn it quickly and ultimately return to the wandering ascetics. And one incident recorded, that many monks are coming and declaring their full attainment, that means becoming an arahant, to the Buddha, and that is being heard by Venerable Susima. So he thought, so this should be an interesting part, in kind of an important event. These monks are quite different from the others, so they are declaring completion of their spiritual practice. There is nothing much to do, nothing else to do, and so he want to know that part as well. Basically, he was thinking that Buddha is keeping something, only these monks are the ones who are holding that, knowing that, so I better approach them and ask what they know and ask what they have. Basically, there are various special skills, psychic powers, I need to verify. Now he approached one by one. And first he clarified whether they are the arahants, asking whether they have declared such thing in front of Buddha, and they admit that. And after that he asked series of questions related to various spiritual powers. Particularly the five abhinya, the five psychic powers, are verified. Starting with the psychic power of various kinds of spiritual, say, skills, like being one can become many, one being many, one can become one, one can penetrate through walls. So likewise, these are some interesting and again many people are sort of fascinated about it, and people have various myths and beliefs about this. So Venerable Susima is asking from those arahants whether they have it. But they deny it and they say they don't have it. And then he is asking about the divine ear. That is also something that they deny. They say they don't have that. And then he is asking about the reading of others' minds. So various people are going through various kind of thoughts, a person with such a capacity can read his mind, whether he is going through a lustful thought, whether he is going through a hateful thought or any kind of deluded thought, whether his mind is concentrated, whether his mind is distracted. So all that behavior of the mind, if one can know, so that is a special skill, an abhinya. And that is also asked from these venerables, but they deny that also. They say they don't have such. And then actually he asks about the knowing of the past abode, so past lives, whether they can see their previous life, many previous lives, many hundreds of thousands of previous lives, and they say they also don't have that. Pubbe nivasa anusati jnana, that is also not something they have. And then they ask, then Venerable Susima asks about the divine eye, that means according to the karma, getting birth at various places, at various births, whether they know such ability, how people are getting birth according to their achievements, according to their karmic collection. So they say that they don't have such either. And then, so after asking all these particular five psychic powers or abhinya, now he simply asks about the arupa jahana. More than rupa jahana, arupa jahana has some special capacity, that is where the mind becomes fully open and there is no any kind of impediment of the rupa or friction of the rupa, friction of the matter. Rather, the mind becomes utterly formless and it's a kind of a peaceful deliverance. So Venerable Susima asks whether they have such kind of a very powerful peaceful deliverance that transcend forms. It's beyond forms. It can penetrate forms. And then they answer that they don't have either that. Then he actually was confused because he was with the impression that the arahant have to have all these, but these arahants are denying all and they say that they don't have it. Now Venerable Susima is asking how it can happen, so they simply say, we are liberated by wisdom, friend Susima. Panya vimutta mayanti. So basically, panya vimutta ko mayang haoso susimati. We are liberated through wisdom. So that answer also something that Venerable Susima didn't understand, so he asked for an explanation, but these arahants didn't give an explanation. Now Venerable Susima approached the Buddha. Now he explained what has happened completely to the Buddha. And then Buddha mentioned, first Susima comes knowledge of the stability of the Dhamma, afterwards knowledge of Nibbana. So this is an interesting area now we are going to explore, where Buddha mentioned Pubbeko Susima Dhammattiti Jnanam Paccha Nibbane Jnanam. Pubbeko Susima Dhammattiti Jnanam Paccha Nibbane Jnanam. So first of all, the establishment of the establish within the Dhamma, within the knowledge happens. Afterwards, the knowledge of Nibbana going to happen. So what is Dhammattiti Jnanam? So this establishment of first comes the proper knowledge, proper establishment, proper stability in the Dhamma, in the teaching of the Buddha. So how it going to happen? So that is what now Buddha explained to Venerable Susima, because Venerable Susima asked an explanation that he didn't understand the Buddha's this short answer. So he is asking a kind of an explanation. Now Buddha start asking various questions from Venerable Susima. So there we can see Venerable Susima properly answer those questions. And those questions are fairly related to the practice, not mere dogmatic or not mere philosophical questions. So certain questions are not that difficult to answer, even by reading a book, one can simply say this is the answer. But that is not the case here. So Buddha's question is related to some form of experiential knowledge. In this particular sutta, actually, when Susimi is answering correctly, Buddha didn't cross-question him whether he properly seen it or whether he properly realized it through his own knowledge or whether he is answering these things out of mere superficial knowledge. He didn't ask such kind of a question. But there are other suttas like Mahatanha Sankhya Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. So when bhikkhus are answering properly, Buddha cross-question those monks to verify whether they are answering with the proper understanding. They are answering with some practical knowledge, not merely because out of faith of the Buddha or just mere reading the teachings. And the monks are answering that their answer is based on their own proper knowledge, practical knowledge, experiential knowledge. So that is what it is important. Not that one can read the books and then answer these questions. That is not the point. Rather, one has seen it. One has practiced it. And accordingly, one is answering. What do you think, Susima? Is form permanent or impermanent? Impermanent when reversed. So what is the form? So we can, from the superficial level, one can say this is the body. So body, whether the body is permanent or impermanent. So everybody can say, okay, I was born such years ago and now it is going through certain amount of changes. And ultimately after, say, 10-20 years, I am going to pass away, the body going to pass away. So it is impermanent. So that is still a kind of a superficial knowledge, not a thorough, deeper understanding. So that is not what Buddha merely expect here. Rather some experiential meditative knowledge. So typically the rupa, the aggregate of matter or the materiality, is explained through four elements: earth element, water element, fire element, and the air element. So those four elements have to be recognized through the body, within the body, and a systematic approach is required to do that. So that is what we are doing in the Kaya Anupassana, in Satipatthana, where one has developed certain amount of mindfulness, one has developed certain amount of concentration, and that concentrated mind, mindfully one is keeping on various sensations, various element characteristics, so that one can recognize all these different element characteristics. The availability of element characteristics are there every time, but we are unable to see them or we are unable to know them because our mind is distracted. Our concentration is not available or poor. There is no mindfulness. So that's why we need to develop fair amount of mindfulness, fair amount of concentration, so that we are readily available to see all these different element characteristics. The more we see them, the more the understanding will be. So many element characteristics are again and again manifesting within the body, and one can recognize them, and for that the necessary skills are to be developed. So once those skills are available, so then the element characteristics are visible, knowable, so one is now observing them, investigating them. So as a result of that, ultimately they may have a thorough understanding, okay, there is nothing called a body, what is available is a mere collection of elements. So those elements are manifesting, those elements are changing and rising and passing away. So all that is a practical knowledge one has to gain by the thorough investigation. So then one may say, okay, there is no person here, there is no being here, there is no soul or self here, but a mere continuation of elements due to various causes and conditions. So that one's perspective, one's view may completely change because one has started with a wrong view that there is I here, or this body belongs to me, or I am inside the body. or within me the body exists. So those kinds of wrong views are there, causing the personality view, causing the Sakkaya Ditti. But when one is thoroughly investigating with wisdom, with clear comprehension, with mindfulness, with concentration, with all that proper collected spiritual qualities, so then only one may thoroughly understand the real nature, the true nature of the body. Now, Susima seems to be someone who is practicing. Now he is answering the Buddha's questions with that knowledge. But anyway, his knowledge is not yet ripened. So the Buddha's task is here to basically enhance Venerable Susima's knowledge, to sharpen it, to properly align it, so that he get a opening, he get a understanding, he get a freedom. Even we are practicing our own way, so it might not be that fruitful if things are not aligned properly. So that's why when we are hearing some Dhamma sermon, when we are reading a book, when we are recollecting, so kind of an alignment can happen. So we already have practice to some extent. Those knowledges are somewhat disorganized. But when someone is thoroughly questioning systematically, so then slowly, slowly, step by step, once knowledge is gathering, developing, the momentum is gathering, and ultimately, once it reaches a certain crux, then the knowledge can come to a kind of a culmination, kind of a freedom can happen. So that's what here going to happen. So now Buddha is asking from Venerable Susima whether the form is permanent or impermanent. So Venerable Susima is answering impermanent. Tankim manyasi Susima rupan nichangva anichangvati anichambante. So Buddha is asking whether the rupa is permanent or impermanent, and Venerable Susima answers it is impermanent. Now when Buddha is asking yampana nichan dukkhan va tang sukhan vati, so whatever is in anicca, whatever is impermanent, is it a satisfactory thing or unsatisfactory thing? Is it suffering or happiness? And Venerable Susima answers it is suffering, because something is impermanent. So if we perceive something as happiness, so that happiness is going to become something else, because things are impermanent. So what is causing happiness subjected to change. So as a result of that, we can't say we are going to have this particular happiness forever. So what is providing happiness is going to be change, constantly changing, under a change. It can be stopped. So as a result of that, it can change to a complete otherwise. As a result of that, we can experience suffering, not the happiness. So this change happens every time. Venerable Susima answers, it is suffering. And then Buddha is asking, Yampananichan dukkhang viparinama dhamma, kallan nutang samanupasitung, etam mama eso hamasmi eso mi attati. Now, if something is impermanent, if something is suffering, and if it is subjected to change, a constant change, is it proper, is it suitable to consider it as myself? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. Is it suitable to regard like this, that? Then Venerable Susima answers, no. So basically, if something belongs to me, then I should be able to govern it. I should be able to control it. I should be able to keep it as I like. But the problem is, whatever that phenomena is in a constant change and beyond my control, then how can I say it is belonging to me? Now, when we are saying a car is my car, so that indicates certain amount of controllability. Whenever necessary, I can take my car, I can go to any place. If I want to change the color, I can change it. If I want to change the, say, tires, I can do that. If I want to sell it, I can sell that, because it belongs to me. I can have certain amount of power on that. I have the controllability on that. So this body belongs to me. then I should be able to control it, I should be able to change it. And without my permission, there can't be any illnesses. But that is not the case. Even though I don't like, illnesses are coming. Even though I don't like, the decaying happens, the aging happens, getting sick time to time. So all these things indicate that this body does not belong to me. But that even that knowledge is not enough. So that is being recognized thoroughly through the wisdom, through the meditation, not meditation. So that is where what we call the elements meditation is very important, where one is keeping attention, concentration. So that will reveal how quickly these things are arising and passing away, how transient all these elements are. So then one will get a thorough understanding. One will get a deeper understanding about this impermanence, about the suffering and the non-governability. So the non-self. So Venerable Susima is now answering properly to the Buddha that form aggregate is impermanent, it is unsatisfactory and non-self. Similarly, Buddha is asking about the feelings. Is feeling permanent or impermanent? So that's what we are trying to learn, we are trying to investigate through Vedananupassana. So we are keeping mindfulness, concentration onto various feelings, and when we are investigating them, so they also become sort of vulnerable, arising and passing away. So that is how we thoroughly understand the proper nature, the true nature of feelings. So at the beginning that also could be difficult because we don't have very sharp mindfulness, we don't have very sharp concentration. As a result of that, sometimes we can't see the true nature of feelings. So the first level understanding may be very say gross kind of an understanding. We might think, okay, a certain feeling arisen, it lasted for 5 minutes and then it disappeared. But later when our mindfulness sharpen, concentration sharpen, then only we can say, okay, even though they appear like a single pain, it is not so. There are many, many small painful feelings are there. Collectively we call it a pain, but it's a series of or collection of little minute feelings. So that type of an understanding is kind of an eye-opening because it's a thorough knowledge of arising and passing away. All these little feelings, minute feelings, quickly arise and pass away. So they don't last even a moment. So when one sees that, so it's a kind of a striking event. So one may simply say, alas, this is completely impermanent. So it is suffering and it is non-self. Because none of these feelings are governable. So we can't invite a pleasurable feeling. We can't request a pleasurable feeling to last for a long time. But they are changing according to their causes and conditions. Now that is related to the feelings. And then Buddha asks about the perceptions. So various signs are there, various marks are there. So through the eyes we see, through the ears we hear, through the nose we recognize, through the tongue we recognize, through the body we cognize or feel, and through the mind we cognize. So in order to do all these activities, we are using certain amount of nimittas. We are using certain amount of marks, signs. Actually, those are the ones we know. It is not that we know through the senses very comprehensive existence of something. Rather, we simply gather these little marks. But internally, once we gather these little marks, little signs, we do some internal manipulation and accordingly we decide, okay, this is what I have seen. Say for example, I am seeing a particular flower. So that simply has a shape, that simply has a color. So that is, once it is taken inside, that is being properly sort of manipulated within the mind. within the brain. So as a result of that, I can say, okay, this is a rose flower, this is a lotus flower. So likewise, we give a name and all that stored information is there. So we do a comparison. So many processes are going on. But in the primary level, what happened at the senses or sensory level is a very fundamental or very immature level of gathering some sense data. So they are actually the marks, they are actually the signs. Based upon those signs and marks, we do a recognition, and that recognition can happen for some time, and then we can perceive. So all those signs, all those marks, all those perceptions are impermanent. So this is something that we may inquire during Sacittanupassana and Dhammanupassana, because in order to do such kind of a very thorough investigation, one has to have mindfulness as well as clear comprehension. So how mind gathers various signs, how mind picks various signs, various marks, when we see something, when we hear something, when we smell something. So all that is there. Our senses are capable to some extent to gather some information, to pick some information. So those information are mere signs, mere marks. After we gather them, we do the internal manipulation, kind of a building up of the image, building up of a object, based upon that gathered sense stimuli, then gathered sense data. Now, when Buddha asked, how about those signs, marks, perceptions? So Venerable Susima answers, they too are impermanent, they too are suffering, and they too are non-self. Now, then Buddha asks about the formations, that is the sankhara aggregate. So various thoughts are there, various emotions are there, various wishes or intentions are there. So all those are going on in the mind. So if one step back and watch them, so they become mere thoughts. They come and go. They appear and then disappear. So there are various thoughts appear in the mind. And if we are able to properly look at them, keeping them in the proper perspective, then we are able to look at them objectively. Accordingly, they come and go. So we can simply notice that, how they are coming and going. So the problem is, we don't allow them to come and go. Rather, once they come, we don't allow them to go. We are sort of adding so many things on top of that. So we do some internal fabrications. We do some internal participations, interruptions, additions, multiplications, preparations onto those incoming thoughts, incoming emotions, and we do all that manipulations. So the moment we stop that, the moment we minimize that, basically, so we can understand the true nature of those thoughts, those images, so those constructs. So that is the area where we are doing in the Cittanupassana as well as in the Dhammanupassana. So whenever, say for example, sensual desire arises, so we can see, okay, this is sensual desire. So as much as possible, we are keeping it as it is. We are not going to add to that. We are not adding any more thoughts. We are not purposely adding any more thoughts. We are not intentionally participating. But there may be a little bit of habitual participation, but that will slowly fade away. So ultimately, when the sensual desire arises, so it may quickly go through, quickly go away. Because we are not participating, we are not promoting, we are not strengthening it. As a result of that, whatever the sensual desire arisen, quickly go away, because there is no further strengthening of that. There is no further fertilizing to that. So it will naturally fade away. So that is where we understand their natural behavior, their true nature. Their true nature is to simply come and go, to arise and pass away. once we stop our participation, once we stop our contribution, so they go through their own cycle. So that is quite impermanent, that is unsatisfactory, that is non-self. So none of these thoughts have any inner core. There is no any essence. So that is why Buddha equate all the sankharas into a banana trunk. Banana trunk appear like so rigid, so solid, but once we peel it out, we can say there is nothing inside. It is coreless. There is no heartwood. So all the sankharas, all the formations, either bodily formations, either verbal formations, or either mental formations, are a collection of all these little things, little sheets. But when we peel it out, nothing is there. There is no inner core. There is nothing substantial. So Venerable Susima, when it is asked, all these constructs, all these formations, are they permanent or impermanent? He properly answered, they are impermanent. When Buddha asks whether they are satisfactory or unsatisfactory, he answers unsatisfactory. And when Buddha asks whether they have an intrinsic self, when Vasusima say it is not there, it is not proper to say it is mine or it is I or it is myself. Because when things are impermanent, when things are non-governable, it is not proper to say it is belong to me, it is myself. So likewise, Venerable Susima answer Buddha's questions correctly, and then Buddha actually enhances that knowledge. He further expands that knowledge. So what we do through Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana is somewhat constrained or limited to the body, to the feeling, perceptions within ourselves first. But inferentially, we can know the outside as well. Inferentially, we can apply that gathered knowledge, experiential knowledge, to outside as well. So that is what now Buddha say, Yankinchu rupang atitanagata pachuppannang ajjattanga bahiddhava olarikangva sukumangva heenangva panitangva yandure sandikeva. Now Buddha expand that knowledge into 11 dimensions. Either it is present or either past, either future, either gross, either subtle, either inferior, either superior, either far or either near. All form should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom. Thus, this is not mine, this is I am not, this is not myself. So this is where we are, someone is expanding his knowledge, enhancing his knowledge. Actually, in order to do that, he may have to interact with others. He can't simply do it on the cushion. So what he gathered while being on the cushion through his own meditation practice, that actually he has to further enhance by day-to-day living. He has to practically sharpen that knowledge. So that is also important. That's why Ajjatta and Bahiddha are included, internal and external. So even though we practice alone at a secluded place, it doesn't mean that we are continuously there. Rather, whatever we have gathered, whatever we have learned, all those insights, we have to sharpen by some amount of interaction with the others, by some amount of involvement with the other activities. So we have to bring that knowledge, we have to bring that practice into our lives. So then it is an expanded knowledge, a vast type of knowledge. So Buddha does that also. So basically to the forms, feelings, perceptions, formations and consciousness, now Buddha does that expansion and thoroughly explain Venerable Susima all that is in the present, past, future, internal, external, gross, subtle, inferior, superior, far, near, all are not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. And then Buddha goes on to another level. So now this is related to the aggregates and fairly related to the present moment. And when one has that thorough knowledge, so what is the result? So the result is the dispassion. Seen thus, Susima, the instructed noble disciple experiences revulsion towards form, revulsion towards feeling, revulsion towards perception, revulsion towards volitional formations, revulsion towards consciousness, because he has thoroughly seen it, investigated it. So he understood that there is nothing permanent there, can't give satisfaction. There is no inner core, not governable. So all that understanding leads to dispassion. Rather than grasping, rather than holding, rather than saying it belongs to me, rather than saying mine, now the mind is ready to give up. Mind is ready to let go. Now the dispassion happens, now the letting go process starts. So now the abandoning, relinquishment has happened. Experiencing revulsion, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, his mind is liberated. Nibbindang virajyati viraga vimuchyati. So once the revulsion is there, the dispassion is there, disenchantment is there. So as a result of that, he gives up, the mind lets go. As a result of that, mind released. So all those bonds, all those attachments are now at least temporarily not available. Now the mind is temporarily released. Tadanganimbuti. To the amount of knowledge we have, the mind is released. So once it is released, the person knows, he may feel, okay, there is a release has happened. Now there is no any attachment. Now there is no any bonding. Now there is no any clinging. Now the mind is completely free. But only for a short moment, because still the latent tendencies are there, influxes are there. The moment that the vipassana knowledge has become weaker, again mind go and grasp. So still that vulnerability is there. But anyway, the release has happened. That he understood the release as well. So now it's a matter of enhancing that. Now actually Buddha takes us to another level by introducing the dependently arisen nature. Parisamuppada is now introduced to Venerable Susima. Basically, he is questioning the Parisamuppada from Venerable Susima, whether he has that knowledge. So it means, so while practicing, actually we can give a little bit of an attention about this Parisamuppada and how to include that into the practice. One area is the feelings, because contact causes feelings and feeling causes craving. So that's an area one can explore, so that certain amount of understanding happens about this causality. The idappacceta, this happens because of this. With the arising of this, that arises. And when this is not available, that is also not available. With the passing away of this, that also passes away. Imasming sati idam hoti, imasuppada idam uppajjati, imasming asati idam nohoti, imasa nirodha idam nirujjati. So this is the parisamuppada, the principle, the theory part, the extremely important theory. So that is applicable to many areas. In between birth and death, this can be applied. When there is birth, the death going to happen. With the arising of birth, death also arising. When there is no birth, death is also not there. With the cessation of birth, death also ceases. So likewise, each and every link, that particular principle can be applied. Now Buddha is asking about the Parisamuppada, starting from the gross end. Do you see, Susima, with birth as condition, aging and death comes to be? And then Venerable Susima say, yes. So likewise, he is asking a series of questions coming towards many, many subtle aspects. That means till the ignorance is there, avijja is there, he is asking, with ignorance as condition, volitional formations comes to be. Do you see that? And then Venerable Susima answers, yes, Venerable Sir. And now Buddha asks about the cessation part also, and Venerable Susima properly answers to those questions as well. Now, all that knowledge is fairly thoroughly established in Susima. So basically, this makes him an enlightened person. So through this questioning, through this sharpening of his knowledge, actually has led him to become an arahant. Now, Buddha asks another interesting part. Now, Buddha say, knowing and seeing thus, Susima, do you wield the various kinds of spiritual power, such that having been one, you become many, and all that special spiritual powers, psychic powers, do you have that? And Venerable Susima say, no. But he has that thorough knowledge, thorough understanding about the aggregates, their true nature, and the thorough understanding about the impermanent suffering, non-self, thorough understanding about the dependently arisen nature. So he now has that thorough knowledge, but he don't have any of those psychic powers. Then Buddha is asking about the what we see this Dibba Sota, that means divine ear. Then Venerable Susima say that he don't have that. Then Buddha is asking about reading others' minds. And Venerable Susima say that he can't do that. And Buddha is asking about the recollection of your past lives. And Venerable Susima say that he can't do that. And Buddha is asking about the divine eye, whether he can see the others, how they are coming to birth, how they are passing away, according to their karma. And Venerable Susima say, I can't do that. I don't have that. Now again, Buddha is asking whether he has these formless attainments. And Venerable Susima say that he don't have that either. But he has fully liberated. That's an interesting point. Now Buddha is, that the question Susima had, now Buddha is actually turning to himself. Buddha is now asking, how now Susima, this answer and the non-attainment of those states, how could this be Susima? Now Susima understand, okay, that is not necessary. So all those psychic powers, all those abhinya are not a must. All those arupa jhanas are not a must. But one's mind is fully liberated through wisdom. So he understood the point because he himself has went through a transformation. It is not that mere superficial knowledge that he understood, or through logical knowledge he understood what those arahants have declared, but he himself has become one of them. He himself has become an arahant who has liberated through wisdom without any psychic powers. Now, after he became an arahant, he actually pardoned the Buddha. Basically ask for forgiveness, because he understood Buddha knew everything. He had made a strong mistake coming to the Buddha Sasana to steal the Dhamma. So if nothing is hidden, there is no secret, Buddha know everything. Now this Susima himself is an arahant. Now Susima prostrate in front of the Buddha. Susima prostrated himself with his head at the Blessed One's feet and said, Venerable Sir, I have committed a transgression in that I was so foolish, so confused, so inept, that I went forth as a thief of the Dhamma in such a well-expounded Dhamma and discipline as this. Venerable Sir, may the Blessed One pardon me for my transgression, seen as a transgression for the sake of future restraint. Now Venerable Susima apologize, and Buddha actually confirms, actually, yes, you have come as a thief, you have done a real mean task. And he is giving a interesting simile also. Buddha mentioned here that there may be a thief who being or bandit who being captured by the king's men, and they are taking him to the king, and now king order a certain punishment, the capital punishment, to that particular bandit, to that particular thief. So from corner to corner, from road to road, that guy being taken, and everywhere everybody is seeing him, and ultimately taken him out through the southern gate and to the south of the city, cut off his head. That's the punishment given to that thief. Now Buddha is asking, what do you think, Susima? Would that man experience pain and displeasure on that account? Yes, Venerable Sir. Although that man would experience pain and displeasure on that account, going forth as a thief of the Dhamma is such a well-expounded Dhamma, and discipline as this has results that are far more painful, far more bitter, and further, it leads to the netherworld. So, if one is coming with an ulterior motive to steal the Dhamma, so Buddha say, it is causes lot of suffering in the future, and it has lot of consequences. But anyway, Susima, you requested forgiveness and we pardon you, because that is the growth of the Dhamma. For it is growth in the noble one's discipline. When one sees one's transgression as a transgression, makes amends for it in accordance with the Dhamma, and undertakes future restraint. So Venerable Susima was pardoned, and Buddha admitted his fault, and now everything was settled, and basically this sutta ends. It's an interesting thing how ultimately Susima himself was transformed into an enlightened being, even though he came to steal the Dhamma. Okay, with that I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Panjay, for a wonderful sutta. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. If anyone has questions, feel free to raise your hands or submit them via the chat. Veronica, feel free to unmute.
Pero, Sharon, Bante.
Yes.
Bante, I'm listening your Dhamma talk, and even last Sunday I listened to the same thing in Sinhala. I'm wondering now, if somebody wants to see the result, Pachetavaya, or the causation of suffering, we have to start with the simple equation of what we can feel it, isn't it, Bante?
Yeah, there are many places one can tackle it. So we can't say exactly at this particular point you need to start. There are many places one can start with. So one place I just highlighted, so that is the feelings, how feelings are happening due to contact.
Yeah.
And then there may be another level, how desire happens due to feelings. So likewise, one can explore many places to recognize the principle. Actually, the principle is the important thing, how one causes another condition, or rather, how one conditions another result. This causes that, something
but
like that.
Sorry. The thing is, when the gross level, we only can feel the happiness or sadness.
Mm-hmm.
So, to go behind that, is are we using the chintamayana on knowledge what we have, or how are we going to
enhance it?
intense. It how to discover that.
Yeah. So that is
that
basically
point, you know, because we are feeling happy.
Mm-hmm.
That is what we feel, and this feeling of happiness is happened because of this incident, and this incident. Why I grab that as a happiness means I like it, and I wanted that to happen or something like that. Are we using that kind of knowledge to go behind, or how are we going? Am I doing it right? You know, maybe I'm asking you.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, simple. Say knowledge based on the rationalizing or the logical thinking is not enough. So basically one has to see how it is operating within the mind particularly. So that is why when one has thorough understanding about the five aggregates and say the arising and passing away nature, it leads to certain amount of release in the mind, non-association of the things, the complete, you know, the mind which is temporarily experiencing certain amount of freedom. So at that level, Buddha introduces the so-called idappacceta, so that one can have the proper capacity to look at it properly. Now say for example, when mind is free from any kind of an attachment, how again the attachment happens? So we can explore the whole situation within our mind, because one has experienced the complete release, at least for temporary time, a short period. But again the attachment happens, again a desire happens. So why? What has caused this desire? So then probably you can look back and say, okay, there is a little kind of happy feeling. So this happy feeling has requested, it is generating certain kind of an inner urge, kind of an inner desire. So this is the happy feeling is the cause. So likewise, say if there is a pain, so I have a desire to get rid of that. So that desire is based upon that painful feeling, the vibhava tanha. So likewise, so these different kinds of craving are based upon the different kinds of feelings. Or else, say if you are practicing citta anupassana, probably you can see how the ignorant time, we do a lot of thinking, a lot of fabrications, a lot of formations. But the moment we have a fair amount of understanding, so the manipulations, those fabrications become fairly reduced. That means even the abhijja paccha sankhara, sankhara paccha vijnana, even that area one is little, you know, slowly one can explore, because one is experiencing the released state of mind. Because when certain amount of knowledge, understanding is there, mind get released. But when the understanding is not there, again mind do a lot of proliferations. So the understanding of such knowledge is kind of an eye-opening, where you are actually exploring at different links. It is not that one link that we always have to touch, but many links are there. One can explore in this series, avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana, vijnana paccaya namarupan, namarupa paccaya salayatana. So we have different links, one causes another. And actually, as you said, certain amount of logical thinking is good, but that logical thinking has to be properly reinforced by the experiential knowledge.
But actually, as I told you, I discussed some things last Sunday too, because I told you that, you know, I can go into this unattached, unconditioned space.
Right.
But I couldn't last week or so. I discussed it to you. I cannot. I feel that I'm doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So then I realized that I was still, I don't attach to anything that particular moment.
Mm-hmm.
I found that I still think that I am the one who are in that position, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when I realized that I have created myself in that situation, I was hanging on to that, you know, that space. So I had to let go of that, you know. So I let go of that, and now I don't feel that I'm there in there, you know. I feel that there's no self, you know. I found that my wrong way of holding into that space also made me that situation. So I feel that now which one? So when I take the feeling, so I can see that, you know, these things you know, because I'm holding into that likeness or I want or something like that, that is why that makes the happy feeling. Or and at the same time, if I don't like something, and my behind I got a aversion to that, I get a dislike feeling, and I am unhappy. So that I can see, and at the same time, you know, whether I'm doing it right, and then looking at it right.
No, still so now you are proliferating. No, that's the thing.
Whether I'm using my knowledge
now, actually,
I got from Dhamma talks.
Now you are complicating the thing. Now you are complicating the thing.
Hello.
Just listen. Just listen. So basically, you are now complicating the thing. So don't make complications there. So just arrive there and just simplify yourself. Don't think. Now, if you are complicating the whole thing, then you are messing up the thing. So just arrive there.
Okay.
Just stay there. It's the utter simplicity. What we are arriving is utter simplicity. So around that utter simplicity, we don't need to do any kind of a complication. I am stepping back and I am asking, or I am doubtful about it, and I am thinking whether I have a grasping about this, or I am rejecting it. So these are unnecessary questions. You just have to just be there. So basically stop all thinking. Just be there. Just enjoy. So during that enjoyment, if you again step back and think whether I am attached to this, whether I am strongly holding this. So that is some unnecessary thing. So while being there, just stay there. It's a complete simplicity. Allow the mind to simply cool down. Just relax. So completely relax. Don't generate any thinking around it. So we simply have gone through a certain amount of practice. So practice has led us to that result. So once we arrive that result, simply don't do anything, don't think anything, just stay there. So while staying there, basically you are very much like consolidating that state. So after consolidating that, so then it is registering in your mind. So then you know, okay, there is possibility of staying like this. This is like the home position of the mind. I can simply jump to that. Now I don't need to go through all that practice sessions. I don't want to go through those strenuous vipassana thing. Can't I simply stay there? Now you are trying to simply jump into that. But you can't stay longer there. Because the defilements. So defilements are the culprit now. Now you need to abandon the defilements. Why I can't stay there? Why I can't stay at home? Because of the defilements. So that simple abiding with that, being confused by my own thinking, by my own doubts. Otherwise, mind's natural, the default state is that. Basically, the mind's default state is this simple, unattached, unconditioned nature. The moment we start thinking, we again confuse the whole thing. We invite doubts. Again, we confuse. We jump to something else.
So that's the thing. The defilements, you know, how to being in that situation, you know, if I can't, when I'm out of that state, the defilements comes up, So then that time I can use that knowledge, or
Yeah,
what
yeah.
do I have to
Yeah,
do,
those
you know,
defilements. Now
that is
say
that.
you get a doubt. You get a doubt. So you have to see doubt as doubt. Don't promote doubt.
Okay.
Yeah. So when the thoughts
Okay,
are there,
thank you
doubts
very
are
much.
there,
Yeah.
skeptical doubts are there, many doubts are there, but they are merely doubts. Don't strengthen doubt, don't promote doubt. You recognize this is a doubt, this is a thought. And you step back and it will pass away. You again you settle back. So that is what we call as the what we call this patanissaggaanupassana. So there are doubts arise, there are various other conditioned phenomena arise, but I don't promote it. I don't want to hold to any of them. I don't want to strengthen any of them. But rather I simply return back to the equanimity, that relaxed, simple equanimity. Etan santang, etan panitang, yaddang upekkha. Because that equanimity is so peaceful, so subtle, so simple, unconditioned. As much as possible, I am returning back to that very simplicity, that calmness, that relaxed state of mind, unconditioned state of mind. That's it. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you very much for this.
Yeah.
Terima kasih.
Yeah.
I think you are like to invite Kumudini for the next question.
Terima kasih, Bante.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for today's Dhamma talk. It was so moving for me. I actually felt in my body like I was having, you know, the feelings of, what is it called? Like when you get the first jhana, the, what is it called? Like bubbly feeling in my body, I was feeling. It was so moving for me, Bhante. I have some questions. I think I have experienced the Bhangajnana, or what you call it, the rising and passing away through the sensations, Goenka style.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that, you were in this talk saying that you experience it and then all the defilements and the anusaya kalesas come back, latent tendencies come back. So that is what happens to me. How do I progress from there?
Come back in the sense? What do you mean by come back?
Well, you know, you feel that sensations and, you know, like you feel there is the, you know that there, you get the knowledge that there's no self sort of thing, but how do you go on after that?
The thing is,
you
when
you have that knowledge
yeah.
in the back,
mm-hmm.
but and then you have this dispassion as well. What is the next stage?
No, the thing is that, I mean, now as we just discussed, so when dispassion happens, the naturally the letting go has to happen. Now say you are holding,
yes,
now say you are holding to something, but you understand what I am holding is useless. So then you simply
yes.
keep it aside. You simply keep it aside. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So dispassion causes letting go.
This monk reached arahathood, but
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
aren't there any stages?
No, that's the thing. So, I mean, through this, you know, that thorough questioning and his mind is sharpened, his understanding is sharpened. So the wisdom is growing. So wisdom is causing to letting go. That's why Panya
yes,
Imutto.
That is the ultimate for him.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
For lesser mortals, is there some other lower stage? Because I remember you mentioning that the latent tendencies will arise.
Mm-hmm.
During this talk today, I'm not quite sure whether I understood it right.
No, latent tendencies will arise when, assume that we were going to Vipassana practice. So at one moment, assume that the mind gets released, a temporary release happens. But we can't maintain that for a long time, because assume that the strength we gathered, the momentum that we gathered through our vipassana is very limited. So to the amount of that momentum, we can maintain the release. But later, again, it will collapse. Again, it will go through to a kind of an attachment, because the latent tendencies are still available.
That is my question, Bhante. So how does one make it, how does one get some energy to get it progress more and more?
No, that is by seeing that the defilement. Now say, for example,
so defilements
assume,
every time. Yes.
No. Now you are in the release mood. Now say you are staying there for 5 minutes. So after 5 minutes, assume now a thought arise. Am I attached to this?
Right.
Am I attached to this? A thought arise. Mm-hmm. Now that is a thought. That is a thought. That is a doubt that has happened as a vichikicca. So at that moment, assume that I didn't let it go. Now I promote that thinking. Now I promote too much thinking. Now I am thinking. Ultimately, I am no more in that release state. Now I confused my mind. I again in the doubt. I again in the vichikicca. Because I didn't see vichikicca as vichikicca. That is a defilement. Still, you know, the defilements are very much hidden. While I was there, that latent tendency was ignited, initiated, and came surface, manifested as a little doubt. So at that moment, assume that I was able to see it properly. Okay, this is just a doubt. This is just a vichikicca. And at that moment, I step back. I am properly seeing it. As a result of that, I am not promoting it. Now that vichikicca, now that doubt simply fades away. Now I am not promoting that vichikicca. I am not promoting that latent tendency. Now again, I am back in the settled state. I am back in the equanimity. Assume now I am there. Now assume that there is a sensual desire arise. Now, sensual desire. Simply now, if assume that I am able to see sensual desire as sensual desire. I am not promoting it. I am not blaming myself for having sensual desire. But it is a mere sensual desire. Now sensual desire pass away. I am back in the release state. So likewise, while in the release state, more and more defilements may appear. We have to see them properly. Let them go. See it properly. Let it go. See it properly. Let it go. That is a fading away process. Kind of a, you know, that weakening process that we are going through. That's why Buddha mentioned Panyaya Disva Disva Pahatamba. Seen through wisdom, you are abandoning things.
Right. Bhante, now in this particular sutra, all this happened in one instant. So
we can't say so. Nothing is, when this has happened, say it may be a several hours discussion, I don't know. But you know, when it is putting to a sutta, only the summary is put it to the sutta, and Buddha may go through a series of questions, and accordingly, Buddha was able to navigate Venerable Susima into successive vipassana knowledges, because he has some special capacity, you know. Because while Buddha is preaching, it is not like we preaching. While Buddha is preaching, he recognizes how the mind is changing in Venerable Susima, how his defilements are operating in him, what are the still available latent tendencies in him. Asava Anuseya Jnana is available only to the Buddha. So accordingly, he navigates through the questioning. And then ultimately the thing has happened.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah,
it was fairly clear to me. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Teruvan Saranani.
Yeah, Teruvan Saranani.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Geshan for the next question.
Teruvan Saranani
The
question what I have is, so this from this sutra, what I have understood when we were discussing about the definement, and they are merely the thoughts that penetrate. And is that my understanding when you sort of describe it? It's one to sort of pin into that, because our tendencies are still there, and we will. It's like the best way that I can address this. I myself, as in the physical, I'm sitting in a railway station.
Mm-hmm.
The thought, if I sort of compare to a train, those trains just passing through,
mm-hmm.
and the defilements are some a train that sort of resonate with my kind of likings or dislike, and I get into it. Is that how to sort of interpret?
Yeah, we can say so. Because if we promote thinking, it becomes a train of thoughts. But
yes.
Otherwise, it becomes a very short train. Just a tram car.
Exactly, yes. Right. And so there are times, if that's the condition or case, you know, like I think it is much easier for me to explain in such way. And I have seen that I am sitting in that train station.
Mm-hmm.
Where the trains are passing, but there are times I know I have got into a train and then ride for a while and then to realize, I am in this type of craziness. And the moment I sort of realize it, I come out like there is no transition, it's just instantaneous. You basically come out and then you feel that, I think in some other time I have talked about that I had this constant high pitch that I hear,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and then it starts appearing again. When I am inside the train, I don't.
Yeah.
Hear the high pitch as well.
Exactly.
So it's a phenomenon I thought I have experienced, and I thought I should share, and I think I have a bit of understanding of this.
So when you are in the train, so basically that means you are deluded. So
yes.
Basically mind has lost its silence. Inner silence is lost, inner silence being disturbed. Because you are in the train, you are in the train of thoughts. You are thinking, basically. You have subjected to thinking.
Exactly, yes.
You are subjected to thinking, so no more silence is available. But the moment you are coming out of the train and allow the train to pass away, now the emptiness is there. Now you can see the sky, you can penetrate, you can see through. The vast sky is available. Now you experience the silence.
Yes. Exactly how I have sort of seen it. And now the question, I think the two sisters also asked how to sort of expand that, and is it through
the practice,
the wisdom, the practice,
yeah.
Basically.
That's why
realizing.
Now the thing is, through the practice we get a very short release. But through the practice, again, we are expanding that release. Okay, first I have the capacity to stay 1 minute. Then I have the capacity to stay 2 minutes. I have the capacity to stay 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. So like that. So now assume that we get released and I am there without getting deluded by thoughts. The problem is the thoughts mostly. Because now we are navigated to the mental sphere. So thoughts are the intruders. They sometimes penetrate. Some simply go behind. They simply very much like very feeble, very weak. They appear like background thoughts. But certain ones, they penetrate, they disturb. the more we have wisdom, we are able to even avoid that penetration. So all become very much like background thoughts. So ultimately we have the, say, very say a profound freedom, a pure freedom. There are no thoughts at all. A complete freedom is there. So likewise, we are very much like stabilizing, consolidating. But interesting part is not that. We now need to jump to that freedom. Without going through the vipassana, you know, that exercise, how can I simply jump to that? But you can't jump that unless it is properly registered. You have to properly recognize that state, then only you can jump to that. Once you jump to that, unfortunately, you can't maintain, because you don't have the momentum. You don't have that the knowledge momentum you acquired through that systematic training. You can't maintain that. Why? Because of the defilements. That is an area you become vulnerable. Now you are in the war field, war front. Now you have to start the battle. Now you are not going through the training, but you are directly while on the battle, you are training yourself. Now you have to see all the defilements, how they are operating, how they are coming, and how you are properly addressing them, you are properly answering. So slowly, your weapons are sharpened, your inside knowledges are sharpened through those daily activities, through those day-to-day things. Now, even without going through thorough vipassana practice, you can stay in that release state, say 5 minutes, say 10 minutes, say 20 minutes. So likewise, so we have to somewhat sharpen our insight knowledges. We have to enhance our insight knowledges even outside the meditation sessions. You might have experienced the release maybe in your cushion, in your sitting, but now you have to bring it to the walking. So while walking also, how can I maintain that release state? While I see things, while I hear things, while I smell, taste, all these things, still mind stays unattached. Still mind stays unentangled. That is the area now we need to very much like practice.
Thank you, Bhante. I think I understand, and I think probably more practice will get to this destination.
Correct.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Are there any questions on your side, Bhante?
No questions. Okay, then we can wind up the session since there are no questions. So today also we are able to learn from Buddha's teaching, and we are able to strengthen our practice. So all the merits that we have acquired, we share with all the celestial beings, all the past relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha jabummatta deva naga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha jabummatta deva naga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha jabummatta deva naga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු